Oh, Kira, congratulations. Look at her tiny fingers. She's beautiful, just like her mommy.
Oh, thank you.
Have you got a name yet?
Well, we're thinking
she's going to call her Brooklyn. Brooklyn, Massachusetts, Phoenix, Arizona.
Your vote is your voice. So if you don't speak up, someone else is deciding for you.
Baltimore, Kentucky, Murphy O'Neill.
Who is that?
Hospital porter. Just back from his American road trip.
Make sure you're registered to vote. Go to checktheregister.ie and be a voter so that it's your voice that's heard. From Am Comisiún Toghcháin, Ireland's Independent Electoral Commission.
Oh, Brookie Massachusetts, come to Auntie Hannah.
The next train at Platform 7 will be an in-depth look into rural crime in Ireland.
There's a story for any time of your day with the Indo Daily Podcast.
Have the lessons of the 20th century been lost, or have we been turning a blind eye all along?
The authorities in Ireland and abroad have been cracking down on the Kinahan cartel.
The actions of their chief executive have called staff to cry offside.
Mute your commute with the Indo Daily Podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
That's a terrible shame if that goes.
Culture should overrule profit. This has been here for decades.
The authorities seem to know the cause of everything but the value of nothing. And nothing is sacred anymore in Dublin.
Today on the Indo Daily, are new hotels killing the soul of Dublin? A protest took place in Dublin this weekend following public outrage over plans to develop hotels at two of the capital's iconic landmarks, Merchant's Arch in Temple Bar and a cobblestone pub in Smithfield.
We need to say stop, and we need to do it very quickly before we completely destroy this city altogether.
4,500 new hotel rooms are expected to come on stream in Dublin over the coming years. But do we need them all? And at what cost to creativity?
So this isn't black and white. Hotels, if they're done sensitively, can also provide jobs for a community and they can really lift a neighbourhood while they're at it.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan and you're listening to the Indo Daily. Today I'm joined by Dublin City Councillor Claire Byrne and Irish Independent travel editor Paula Canila to discuss whether, if in the battle between construction and culture, the city is losing out. But first,
hold the hand that once held yours.
Ona Canavan is a traditional Irish musician, activist, and local resident who organised the march to protect the cobblestone.
She was old before she lived her youth.
Owen, what does the cobblestone mean to you as a musician?
Well, a lot, I suppose, for myself and a lot of other musicians, it's kind of one of the main cultural pubs that we have, really. It's not, you know, people, I keep saying that, I think it's true, it's not just a pub, really. So, you know, going back decades, my own dad used to go there and play and all that. But, you know, for ourselves, and living in the area, we'd obviously go in for sessions. But in the back room as well, there'd be concerts, there'd be music classes, there'd be dance and all that kind of thing would be going on, yeah.
So basically the planning application is the derelict buildings beside it and kind of overarching it will be removed to be replaced by a hotel. What did you make of that?
It's more than that. It's the back room will be gone as well, the kind of the outside area, the cobblestone. So but that would be, you know, a massive loss, really. As well as all of that, I suppose it's just been kind of swallowed up by this kind of 9-story hotel. So I don't know if for people, anyone who's seen the kind of photographs, is quite stark. You know, you've got you see the cobblestone just kind of nestled in, and there's this big monstrosity on top of it.
Is the issue really that is part of it that it's a hotel? If this was affordable housing being built there, do you think people would have a different view?
There's a dire need for housing, obviously. And the plans as they are would basically see the cobblestone turned into a hotel bar, as far as I can see. You know, it would basically become the kind of residence bar for tourists. And I presume that would be that could be quite lucrative. You could market it to people as come and stay at the famous cobblestone hotel, but it won't be the cobblestone as we knew it. It'd be kind of a shell of its former self to be sold to tourists, you know.
You had a protest at the weekend. You were one of the organisers. You're the organiser of a petition around the cobblestone. Do you think your views are being heard?
Yeah, I think there was a massive response, to be honest. I mean, the petition at the moment is, I mean, last time I looked at it, it's over 30,000 signatures. There's the proposals around Merchant's Arch, but there's campaigners at the protest. Somebody spoke on behalf of the Moore Street campaign. You know, there's also this Talca Park. You know, there's all of these different things that are going ahead. And yeah, I think it definitely resonates with people. And I think really, in order to actually change things, I think we need people to get together and get organized and campaign. Well, I hope certainly anyway that we can beat this proposal, but also then channel that energy into a kind of a wider fight for, you know, I suppose the democratization of the planning process, where people who live here actually have a say, and for obviously, and linking in that very much to housing as well.
I'm joined now by Paula Canina, travel editor of the Irish Independent. Paul, just talk us through these two controversial plans to build hotels in Dublin.
Absolutely. Hotels come in different shapes and sizes, as we all know. And what you'd be talking about with regards to the cobblestone site is pretty much a medium-sized hotel. You're looking at the north side of Smithfield, where a 9-storey building would go in with 114 bedrooms. It will have its own restaurant, and it will take up pretty much that portion of the square, which, as you know, at the moment is looking pretty derelict, apart from the beautiful cobblestone. Meanwhile, in Merchant's Arch, and I just walked through it while I was coming up to you in the studio today. You're talking about a much smaller development. It's 3 stories in height. There would be fewer rooms, and it would take up a kind of a footprint that just is the end of the lane as you enter into Temple Bar, and then the building or two as you turn left. So it's a much smaller kind of a boutique. I always hesitate to use that word, but a boutique development there. So they're quite different propositions.
And in that case, the debate has been about Merchant's Arch. The archway will remain. People will note that you come across the Halfpenny Bridge from the north side. You go under this beautiful arch and Temple Bar opens up. So the archway is staying. It's what behind that in Temple Bar Square is that issue.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And that is a real piece of Dublin street theatre. You can remember Phil Lynott walking through it in his video. You can remember U2 pictures taken there as you cross over the Halfpenny Bridge, walk under that arch. You just couldn't be in any other city. And so, yes, you're absolutely right. The arch itself that transitions you from the quays through to the laneway is staying. And that's part of the Merchant's Arch pub now, which is one of the old guild halls of Dublin originally. But as you move further towards Temple Bar, you'll see there are shops on the left and right. And it's the left-hand side as you approach Temple Bar. There's several shops there. There's a record store, vintage clothing store and so on. It's that portion that we're talking about and those businesses that would be changed.
1,000 hotel rooms are expected to come on stream in the Dublin market over the coming 3 years, according to the property group Savills. It says Dublin had an undersupply of hotel rooms pre-pandemic, and it expects the industry to get back to 2019 levels of activity and demand in the coming 2 to 3 years.
Why do we need more hotels in Dublin?
That's a good question. And I would have given you such a radically different answer 18 months ago, Fiona. We were in, if you can picture, rewind back to then, we just say we've never heard of COVID at that stage. We were in a period of development in Dublin. There had been historically few hotels built in the first 5 or 10 years of the 21st century. We were playing catch up because as the city was recovering from the financial crisis, the visitor numbers were growing. There was a lot of conference business out to, for us to capture. There were events happening in the city. There were more and more air routes coming into Dublin. And it was felt that we needed to provide for these visitors. Dublin is the gateway to the country. We were looking to grow our tourism numbers, and we needed bed nights and beds and pillows for all these people to lay their heads on. The occupancy rates in Dublin were high. The rates were high. You remember the arguments we used to have any time there was a Six Nations game or there was a big concert in town and so on. So the solution to this from the tourism and from the development side was seen to be more hotels. Now, it's not to say raise everything in the city and put in 100 different hotels, but there was a pipeline of 4,500 hotel rooms still to come. And this is where it's coming from. Now, let's fast forward to where we are now. And suddenly, after 18 months of a pandemic with tumbleweed blowing through the city, the question is, are those volumes of tourists going to return? Is this the kind of development we need? Or is this the time and the place to build back more sustainably and to create a city that maybe isn't completely geared towards tourists, but takes its communities and its localities more into account? Because we've now seen what Dublin, we've now seen what places like Barcelona, Venice, Dubrovnik look like when the tide pulls back and there's no tourists, and how tough it is for them to survive. So is this now the time to create a more inclusive city? And I think that's a big part of the debate.
So Paul, the argument that would be put forward on the business side is hotels aren't all bad. They do bring substantial employment. They do bring tourists. The modern day tourist wants to stay in a hotel. They don't want to be hiring an Airbnb and staying in somebody's spare room as much. The high net worth tourist wants to come stay in a hotel, go around the tourist attraction in a city for a weekend or a couple of days and head home again.
Yeah, there's not a black and white issue. There's hotels are an important part of the tourism picture. They provide jobs locally. They provide business for suppliers, for people who are supplying the restaurants, for people who are changing the rooms, whatever it may be. Hotels can be ugly and they can be generic and they can be anywhere in the world, or they can be done really sensitively and they can become selling points in themselves. You know, you pick up a magazine like Condé Nast Traveller in the last week or so, and it listed the Marker Hotel in the Docklands as Ireland's, you know, number one hotel. That's an example of an architect designed hotel in a space where it's appropriate and culturally appropriate beside the Daniel Libeskind's Bordgash Energy Theatre. If our listeners are watching Kin, they'll recognise the Mason Hotel in Dublin's Docklands with the rooftop bar. That big, sleek glass and steel structure comes out of an old 18th century warehouse and townhouse that has been sensitively preserved and wrapped into the structure. So just two examples. And hotels can be done in radically different ways. So it's important not to just tar them all with one brush. No more than saying office block, apartment block, mixed-use development. You know, you've got these things need to be thought of in the grey areas. How sustainable are they? How culturally appropriate are they? Do they fit their neighbourhoods? And do they have the correct uses?
I'm joined now by Green Party Dublin City Councillor Claire Byrne. Claire Byrne, what's the problem here? These are, in some cases, derelict buildings, space that is underutilized in a capital city that needs development. So what do you see being the issue here?
There's a number of things going on. We have a lot of hotel beds in the city. We're in the middle of a housing crisis, and we're also in a post-COVID city at the moment as well. So it's very hard to understand these decisions being made to grant planning permission for additional hotel rooms in the current context that we find ourselves in at the moment. And I was also just having a look at Fáilte Ireland and their kind of bed projections in the city. And the last one was published in 2020, where they were saying we still have a deficit of 1,000 hotel beds. But it's always hotels. Like, it's not, when you look at the other figures, like, we only have about 7,000 hostel rooms in the entire city. We've only about 10,000 guest houses and less than 10,000 B&Bs as well. So, you know, we're really only offering this one type of accommodation for our overseas visitors. But what's also happening now in the context of Merchant's Arch and the Cobblestone is that at the same time, we're also eroding what our visitors come to Dublin to see. So particularly with Temple Bar, when you look at how that is going to completely dramatically change the look and feel of Temple Bar, along with the proposed plans for Temple Bar Square, we're completely altering the face of a very popular tourist spot. People come to see the cobblestones and they come to see the art and they come for, you know, the kind of quirky alternative retail offers that Temple Bar has traditionally had. And what that particular development is doing is completely eroding that. It's taking away four individual Irish retailers, one of which is the Dublin Vintage Factory, one of my favourite shop, which has had to move, I think, about four times for similar reasons around the city at this stage. So at what point do we let Fáilte Ireland kind of dictate our city planning policies, and at what point do we just say stop, you know? Like, it's not that long ago that we had a situation where our citizens were living in hotels and our visitors were living in homes. That's changed a little bit now because of COVID. But, you know, do we really need another hotel here, you know? And at what cost? You know, we're seeing hotels being granted planning permission by Dun City Council and by Imbor Pinola all across the city, very often at the expense of our heritage or of our culture as well. We've seen it with the Tivoli, we saw it with Andrews Lane Theatre. So how we can justify granting further planning permission for hotel beds in a post-COVID city when we still have a housing and a cultural crisis on our hands, it's very hard to understand the rationale.
But yeah, you mentioned it. It is Dublin City Council that is, you know, the first port of call in terms of planning of the city of Dublin. So does the blame not rest in City Hall here?
Well, it does. It does. And actually, you see in Merchant's Arch, it was actually refused planning permission the first time round. And when you look at, and actually this time round as well, the inspector, the Ombord Pinola inspector, recommended not granting planning permission for all the reasons that I've just listed, and all the reasons that people have been saying that, you know, it injures the visual amenity of the area, with the loss of four Irish retail units, which will disrupt the mix of offerings, and that it kind of goes contrary to planning and sustainable development plan. Yet Ombord Pinola then come back citing specific objectives relating to tourism within the city, and on those grounds thought it was justified to grant planning permission. So what's happening is we have planning authorities picking and choosing aspects of our development plan that'll suit their own objectives in a way. So what has happened in this instance and in many instances is that they're completely ignoring all the other objectives in the city development plan in relation to housing and the need for housing across the city, in the need, you know, in terms of climate resilience and compact development, over concentration of particular one type of use, you know, and retail is another thing. Like, we're at a 30% vacancy at the moment in the city in terms of retail as well. So, you know, also kind of, so we're taking away four retail units to put in another restaurant. And so it's almost like the Dublin City Development Plan isn't, you know, and we're obviously in the process of the next one at the moment, and we're fighting really hard to get a handle on the hotel and the student accommodation developments. You know, putting in motions trying to get hotels being removed as a permissible use in the zoning for the city centre at the moment is a way to just put a halt to it. We called a special meeting in December 2019 on the very issue as well, but nothing has changed. And so it's very disheartening, I have to say, as an elected representative, I'm sure, for the citizens of the city, to put all this effort into a city development plan, put all the effort into making their voices heard through the planning process, for them to be ignored time and time again.
Merchant's Arch, so, and the cobblestone have really become a focal point and a symbol of the problem. Are you hopeful that something will change there in the long run, and or is that just going to be too late?
I do feel we're too late in lots of ways. Like, I think this Merchant Arch decision is absolutely crushing, and it's crushing for the city. And it, in a way, it is the final blow, and it's great to see people mobilised. But people have been heralding this for a long time. Give Us the Night have been talking about this for years, for example. You know, Andrea Horan has No More Hotels campaign. As I said, as elected representative, I've been flagging this for many, many years. But we do need planning reform. Like, and I really welcome that announcement by the government, because we are in a situation where we've Ombord Pinola going against their own inspectors. So we need massive planning reform. As far as I'm concerned, Ombord Pinola, if they're going against the decisions of their own inspectors, there is something very, very wrong. We really need to say stop, and we need to do it very quickly before we completely destroy this city altogether.
Back to Paula Cunila, the negative reaction towards these developments, this argument of culture versus construction, not new to Dublin, really, is it? I mean, even in more recent times, we've had these arguments, and go back in history, you've had the same.
Oh, you have. And I view cities as kind of, you know, living things. And you always have, there's always change. They're never static. They're never finished. They're always developing. I've been walking around Dublin, visiting it and living in it for decades at this stage. I've written a book about it. And it's a constant story of what's changed, what's being replaced, and the arguments as that happened.
We are marching for two purposes today. And please let us remember both purposes. We are marching to stop the destruction of Wood Quay.
Think about, you know, buildings we've lost over time. 7 Eccles Street, which was the home address of Leopold Bloom in Ulysses, it's gone. It's the matter at this stage. Think about Wood Quay in the 1980s, if I'm remembering correct.
The Irish Transport and General Workers Union Band led the parade, which had representatives from many sectors of Irish society. The controversy has divided the city councillors, of whom only 9 took part in the march. At the Commissioners of Public Works office, a black wreath was laid by Dr. Michael Herity of the Royal Society of Antiquaries, and a letter of protest delivered to Mr. Pierce Wise, Minister of State at the Department of Finance.
Yeah, late 70s, early 80s, yeah. Which is now the site of Dublin City Council, Dublin Corporation. headquarters being built there at the time on a Viking settlement, and a massive upsurge of opposition towards that at the time.
Absolutely. You had the Theatre Royal, some listeners may remember that, Boland's Mills.
Theatre Royal, famously retained by Dublin's ugliest building. Theatre Royal, fabulous building going back to the 1820s, a time where people would come from all over the country to go to see theatrical events in Dublin. Knocked, replaced by Hawkins House, the Department of Health building, horrible, ugly, rotten building, now being knocked itself, and that site being redeveloped. So, yeah, there is a cyclical nature of these things.
There is, and we've even recently, we've had these debates about Bewley's when it looked like it may not be able to reopen. There's an ongoing debate about Moore Street, what's going to happen there. You'll remember the whole Fitzwilliam Street, where 16 Georgian houses were raised for that famous ESB development, and that is going to be redeveloped yet again. So this happens all the time, and you know, a lot of the time, yes, these are bad designs and they're not culturally appropriate and they don't fit and they make changes that are not right for the city, but some, you know, you need to leave room for new developments and new architecture as well. There are plenty of examples we can cite about, you know, new architectural development that works, be it hotels or be it, say, the development of the National Gallery in Dublin not so long ago. So it's, I come back to the point of, I'm not the cobblestone is a beautifully live, living space. You could not sit in a space like that anywhere else in the world. And yes, absolutely, I believe it should be preserved. But it's not that we have to keep everything and you cannot have new development. You need the balance and you need the dialogue.
What do tourists think? What kind of a city do they want to visit?
I think the further we go from this island, the more kind of reductionist it gets, and the more people start to think about Ireland as the land of Guinness and you know, bacon and cabbage and the Book of Kells and so on. But once people get here, what you'd hope is that they experience a city, and we're talking about Dublin today, that is a lot more exciting, a lot more complex and a lot more immersive than that. We got a fantastic contemporary music scene that we hope to see burst back onto the stages in the city soon. Great art, great design. Our food has come, is world class at the moment, in my opinion. And you want them getting back on that Ryanair flight and telling their friends, wow, Dublin, yes, it has all this heritage, has all this historical stuff, but it has this really cool living local culture at the moment again, and I want to go back. People are attracted here, of course, by the top line marketing. They may also come because there's a cool hotel. They may come simply because they have Marriott points and they can do a layover and they can spend an extra night. But it's once they get there, they don't want to see a city that looks like a kind of a generic business district. They want to engage with a city that has lots of layers, that really seduces them and puts the hooks in them. And that's becoming more and more important in tourism, that kind of like a local approach.
And yet you find yourself conflicted when defending Temple Bar, because all you picture are overpriced pints and rowdy stag parties going through it on a Friday and Saturday night. But then part of it is that tourists come to cities, they want to see that there is life there. They expect to see tourists from other countries also so being there enjoying it.
Yeah, absolutely. There isn't one kind of tourist. They're not on a single budget. They're not one person or a couple or a family. They come from all kinds of different places and with all sorts of different things they want to do. And you know, Temple Bar is a cautionary tale in many respects, but there's also a lot of good sides to it. And the other point I'd make is that it's not just Dublin here we're talking about. I mean, cities you think about around Europe, Barcelona, Venice being a case in point, which is banning cruise traffic, and it's going to charge day trippers €10 to enter the city because we're starting to feel like a theme park. These are debates that are being had all over the world. And as we start to re-engage with tourism after the pandemic, the danger is that we panic and we go back to this high volume model that feeds into the housing crises and the generic development that we've been discussing. Whereas I do think the opportunity here, in a sense, is to build back better, more sustainably, listen to what communities want and create that kind of a rich tapestry of a city and a Dublin that it just cannot be experienced anywhere else. And I do think that'll pay off in the long run. More local jobs, people more invested in it, tourists telling a great story when they go home. Of course, I sound a little bit idealistic there, and there's always going to be the cut and thrust of development as we see it. But that's the moment in time, I think, that we find ourselves in.
That was Irish Independent travel editor Paul O'Kinnealan. You can follow his travel writing on independent.ie. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode was produced by Mary Carroll, researched by Tabitha Monaghan. with sound design by John Smith. Archive clips were courtesy of independent.ie and RTE. And you can listen to the Indo Daily wherever you get your podcasts.